We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the numeral 4, KIDS.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's Zach Zaidman.
Tyler O'Neill at the plate, pitch on the way. He lines one off the glove of Wisdom. It bounces in the foul territory. It's a fair ball along the sidewall. Wisdom picks it up, throws to second in time. And they nail a sliding O'Neill.
I thought it was Max Zaidman. I'm sorry.
With Bernstein and Rahimi.
For the W.
On The Score.
You hear Zach Zaidman's voice all over Cubs games as he reports. He brings them back from break. He does play-by-play, pre-game and post-game and everything. The major Cubs presence as their pre- and post-game host. He is on Twitter at Zach Zaidman. And he joins us on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show on The Score. Hi, Zach.
Hello, guys. What an atmosphere at Wrigley this weekend. You know, I thought Pat described it perfectly during the epic game on Friday after the Rizzo at-bat, that if you were a young Cub fan attending the game at Wrigley Field, you were hooked for life after what transpired. It was certainly something very different than what we've been used to for the last year and a half.
You are probably one of the best people to talk to about the difference between working in an empty ballpark, yet still seeing baseball, and now seeing Wrigley at full capacity. How do you describe the differences, and even from what we just saw before this, at less than 100%?
I think that this is what everyone's been missing. I think the players, too. I had a long conversation with Kyle Hendricks about this yesterday before the game. And, you know, a lot of times you'll hear players talk about how it's great to have fans in the stands and, you know, they influence the game. But they really do influence the game. And I'm used to it. You know, having covered the Bears for all those years, in football, fans definitely can influence what transpires on the field. You don't think that's the case in baseball, but at Wrigley this weekend, I think it definitely was the case. And I think you heard it last night. If you were listening on the radio and Craig Kimbrell comes in to start the ninth, and there's just this intensity that takes over, that consumes you in the ballpark. And I think that's what's been missing. You know, you miss the energy that a crowd can provide. We heard so much last year about players having to manufacture their own energy. And that's why the Cubs got on some opponents' nerves. Remember when they would just go crazy mm-hmm. every time Anthony Rizzo would come up to bat? You didn't have to manufacture anything this weekend. And to me, at least going forward, that's the way it's going to be at Wrigley Field. You're not always going to face the Cardinals, but you're always going to have the fans in the stands when the Cubs are playing the way they are right now. And I think that is definitely going to influence things going forward.
I always get back to what was said when I was in any number of various minor league teams, when they talk about how that guy is going to react when I put the second deck on there. And they say, you know, you get to some of these stadiums, you see that second deck, the players aren't quite the same. And that's not literally because of the deck. It's not because of the concrete and steel. It's because of the people in there and the noises that they're making and the presence and what those vibrations are like on that field. So that's what they're talking about. And I think that there are some players for whom it's going to take some getting used to, especially with all the AAA guys and with both teams in town that we're seeing and combining the timing of this atmosphere with having a lot of guys coming up from the minors.
Yeah, I spoke to Tommy Nance about this on Saturday. He's a 30-year-old rookie. Now, the first time he visited Wrigley Field was as a fan when he was playing independent ball. But this weekend was the first time since he became a major leaguer that he got to experience what all the veterans have been talking about. Andrew Chafin's another example. You know, he's a guy that's been around the majors for a long time. He's a veteran player. He's seen it all, right? But never in a Cub uniform. And I think they could not believe what was taking place this weekend because it felt like a playoff game and it was so sudden. You know, you go from playing in, you know, these stadiums that are limited with capacity, especially out west in San Francisco and San Diego where they were coming from, and the limited capacity that they had faced at Wrigley Field, even though the last series prior to St. Louis at Wrigley was against the Padres when they swept San Diego, and the fans were really loud for that, but it wasn't anything like what took place this weekend. And in terms of some of the Cubs that you hadn't heard of before the season started that are having a big impact, guys like Sergio Alcantara and Patrick Wisdom and Tommy Nance and some of the guys out of the pen, yeah, it's this is Major League Baseball at the highest possible level, and they won all those games, which I think is another thing that just adds to the mix.
Well, and we bring up the who are these Cubs guys who are coming through, but what about the fact that Jock Peterson, after having that slow start to the season, hasn't just heated up, he's maintained, and was the acquisition the Cubs needed him to be?
I think what has been remarkable this season to me when watching the Cubs is there's always been a point during the season where they need somebody to step up. And someone always does, whether it's some of the guys we've never heard of and now the guys that they needed to when they initially signed him. And Jock Peterson is that example. He's doing now. And it took a while. It took the injury for him to gain perspective. But since the injury, he's batting better than 300. You know, he's given you the power numbers. He's been an impact player. And they still don't have a true leadoff hitter. But it seems like whoever they've put in that spot has had an impact. And Peterson is doing it when he's hitting from the left side. So I think that's been a huge thing. But to me, let's step back. The reason that other guys in the lineup have been able to contribute, in my opinion, is because Chris Bryant has looked like Chris Bryant mm-hmm. essentially from the start of the season. And, you know, we can talk about all the other guys that you think are valuable, and they are, but no one is more valuable than Chris Bryant. He's number 5 in OPS today. That's for the people that don't understand analytics. It's probably the most important stat because it measures your ability to get on base and hit for power. He's number 6 in average, number 12 in home runs, tied for 10 in RBIs. And because of that, when you look at the Cubs' statistics as a team in the National League offensively, number 4 in home runs, number 4 in runs, number 5 in OPS, number 4 in stolen bases. It's a very balanced attack in large part because you have to account for what Chris Bryant has been doing this season.
Yeah, this story just went up at FanGraphs that just posted on Twitter about the return of the Cubs' Big Three and looking at Rizzo, Baez, and Bryant and what their projections, especially looking at the next 4 or 5 years of production and how their current production this year has changed their projections. This has to do with valuation, and this has to do with, in large part with trade value or just future value, however you want to look at it. And each one's play this year has dramatically altered their projections of production for the foreseeable future. That's how significant their performance has been. The other thing I was looking at on that site was I looked at Jock Peterson, and I called him up as you were talking about him. Right now, he's at a weighted runs created plus of 109. That means he's 9% better than the average offensive player. He is worth half a win of value. So you think, to whom would I compare him then, right? Because what was the choice? Kyle Schwarber.
Right, Schwarber would be the discussion.
Who hit 2 home runs yesterday. Kyle Schwarber is at a 106 WRC+, and a wins above replacement of 0.6. So he's getting some more value outside of offensively. But right now, Joc Pederson is the marginally better offensive player, pretty much a wash, and they pay him less.
Correct. And that was the goal, I think, when they made some of the tough decisions that they needed to make this offseason. You know, I don't think they planned, like, for example, they didn't plan on trading away Yu Darvish when the offseason started. But a unique situation materialized where there were a whole bunch of people in San Diego that run the Padres that were familiar with Yu from his days down in Texas. So they made an offer. You have this big contract, and they made a decision from a business standpoint that this was the right time to say goodbye to Darvish, because they may not get an offer like this to get themselves out of that contract. So they made the trade. So they get Zach Davies, the only major leaguer they got back in that deal. Davies, by the way, a 1.86 ERA now over his last nine starts. He's not Yu Darvish, but he's pitching deeper into games, and he's found himself, found that command. He's gotten in the Cubs pitch lab. He's worked with Tommy Hotovy, and he's kind of found himself and gotten in a groove after a rough April where the ERA was nearly 10. Kyle Hendricks, the same thing. You know, he's not going to wow you, but he has since May. He's getting the job done, 7-1 over his last eight starts with a 3.12 ERA. And with 100% capacity at Wrigley Field, and now that they've shown you overall as a ball club that they can be in the mix, the Cubs will have some advantages that the other teams in the National League Central won't have as you approach the trading deadline. And you readjust all the things that the Cubs are capable of doing now because of those two things I mentioned.
Oh, absolutely. Davies, the best example is last night to me. And what was a pitcher's duel? Go 6 2/3, no runs given up. Only two walks compared to six strikeouts. When his changeup is on, it is proving to be the bread and butter.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, when I look at what this team needs going forward, you can't have enough good starting pitching. You know, you go back to 2016 when they won the championship. They had dominant starting pitching. Yes, they were very good offensively, but they had dominant starting pitching. I don't think anyone will look at this Cubs team in 2021 and say they have dominant starting pitching. In fact, they have some major question marks at the back end of the rotation. The guys at the front end have started to stabilize things. They need Jake Arrieta to build on what he did last time out in San Diego when he held the Padres to one run in five innings. Before that, really since he cut his thumb, his ERA has been 8+ in the previous six starts, and they've been able to escape this because they've been so balanced offensively and their bullpen has been lights out. The Cubs are 29-2 when leading a game after five innings because of that bullpen. And what that means is their pitchers don't have to go deep in games because David Ross has found the right mix of guys that he can use out of the pen to hold the lead. And that's great. It's not going to last forever, though, and that's why you'd like to boost the starting staff with some extra arms, which gets back to 100% capacity at Wrigley Field. You've shown now that you can compete at a high level, and you're going to be in the mix all the way through, and I think those things can help the Cubs going forward, because there aren't many teams that can do what the Cubs can do in terms of the business standpoint and guaranteeing packed houses the rest of the way with full capacity.
Additionally, you mentioned Chris Bryant. I don't know that we're giving him enough credit as to how he's also playing all these different positions defensively.
Without even giving you a second thought, you know, he doesn't argue about it. He welcomes the diversity of being able to play everywhere, and he plays every position well. You know, we've talked so much about Javier Baez and the great instincts that he has on the diamond and all the fun things he can do. Chris Bryant can do the same things. He just doesn't do those things with as much flash as Baez does. But you can play him at first. You can play him at right. You can play him at center. You can play him in left. You can play him at third. And what he's allowed the Cubs to do is overcome all the injuries that they've had at different positions, because you can put a guy like Patrick Wisdom at third or an Alcantara in the lineup. You know, Jason Hayward gets hurt, boom, you put Bryant out in the outfield. Joc Pederson gets hurt, Bryant goes out to left. Jake Marisnyk gets banged up, you put Chris Bryant out in center. And most of the time, when you have guys that keep switching positions, it almost always impacts them offensively. And it has not with Bryant. That's why he is in the running for MVP in the National League this season. It's because he does all those things well with the glove, and it never impacts what he does offensively. Great point, Layla.
And actually, just sort of as you're talking, I'm looking at the data here, and based on UZR 150 for this year, he's actually been a negative defensively at first base. He's a minus 2.9 overall runs per 150. At third base, he's been positive at 1.1. In left field, he's been minus 9. So it's actually pretty bad in left field. And this is small sample size, obviously. And in center field, a minus 4.2. In right field, a positive 3.7. So that's small sample size sort of by the numbers. But the fact that he can get you out of a game at any position, he's played shortstop before as a Cub. In 2016, they played him at shortstop. The fact that a guy 6'5", with his athletic ability, can almost literally be put anywhere is obviously of value. Zach, we were talking earlier about this, and I am increasingly concerned, especially as we get toward fall and looking at what the projections are for the Delta variant of coronavirus, that the Cubs could be walking right into a John Rahm situation. Walking into right, just being on the cusp of something really important and good happening, and then getting knocked out because they're not at the vaccination threshold. And I would love to take, you know, Arrieta and Rizzo and Hayward and Sogard and whoever else is part of that not 85%, and show them that image of John Rahm being told that with a 6-stroke lead, his tournament's over, because that could happen to this team.
And that's why Jed Hoyer, before all these revelations became public with the guys who are not vaccinated, that's why Jed Hoyer expressed in the strongest possible of terms for a president of a team publicly prior to all of this happening, that he was concerned, and that just from a baseball standpoint, it could put the team at a competitive disadvantage. And it's something that is always going to hang over the Cubs going forward, because, yes, I know the city's opened up and, you know, Wrigley's at 100% capacity and all that, but the pandemic isn't over. So it's always going to be a part of the story until we're truly over this. And unfortunately, it's not just the Cubs. It's the country as a whole. And all you can do is give these guys as much information as possible.
But they're not listening to it.
But
they did. They've got doctors right there telling them what's true and what's not. They're like, I don't know. People are choosing not to believe the people who actually know stuff.
And that's why Hoyer expressed the frustration that he did. But he's done as much as he can possibly do as the man who runs the Cubs to let the players know this is the reality of the situation. After that, it's up to the player. It's up to each individual.
I do want to ask you this, actually, now that we have a little bit of time. I looked at Dan in panic. I know we're up against it. But Kimbrel's outing, to me, what he did against Nolan Arenado, if that didn't say everything that he's done this season in a single at-bat, I'm not quite sure what illustrates it any better. Curveballs and fastballs working for him, but just the way he was able to get Arenado's knees to buckle. What did you think when you saw that at-bat?
That's a Hall of Fame reliever, right? It's a Hall of Fame closer, one of the best of all time. That's the guy they thought they were getting in 2019. And it makes you think, man, the Cubs' fortunes would have been totally different if that was the guy that was here in 2019. If the Cubs had that kind of player in 2018, you know, they wouldn't have just backed into the playoffs and gotten bounced out by Colorado quickly. Who knows?
He still couldn't hit, though.
Yeah.
They didn't need much run support yesterday.
Yeah, but the offense and the balance of the offense, because the Cubs used to be, for the last 3 years heading into this one, they were an offensive slugging team that didn't slug as much as you need to be an offensive slugging team. And they've balanced that out this year. They can beat you in a variety of different ways offensively. And they've got a bullpen that isn't just good. It's been great this year. It's the hardest thing to assemble year in, year out, especially a closer. They've got one of the best in baseball, one of the best all time. And it's been fun to watch, because you can manipulate a lot of different things over the course of a ball game when you have that much trust in your pen.
Zach, thank you as always.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Zach.
That's Zach Zaidman on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show. Next, we will talk to Cubs President of Business Operations, Crane Kenny, on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
And apparently our breaking Cubs guest is Crane Kenny at 1025.
Oh, beautiful. All righty then. All perfect.
Right. Got that information real time.
Crane and I went to Notre Dame together. I used to kick him out of the weight room when he would show up from the swim team.
I bet he had those perfectly tailored monogram shirts back then, too.
They all do.
That was Tom Thayer, Golden Domer, earlier this morning, sitting in for David Haw on the Mully and Haw show. And indeed, he was sharing his memories. I don't know if it's true or if it's exaggerated or not, but only Crane Kenny can tell us if it is. He's the Cubs president of business operations, and he joins us now on The Score. So did that actually happen?
Oh, my God. So accurate. Yeah. Imagine. So I come in as a swimmer and in the food chain of athletics at Notre Dame. I'm not sure there's a lower rung than swimming. And we had to share the weight room as a winter sport with the football team. And at one point I got paired up with Thayer on the bench and he's benching like 700 pounds and I'm supposed to be spotting him. And he goes, Hey, give me a hand here. And I'm like, dude, if that comes crashing on your chest, the only help I'm going to provide is to yell for someone to come pull it off you. Cause I can't lift it. So yeah, he was dead on and chasing me out of the weight room. That's for sure.
This also sounds like an exact scenario where Tom Thayer would be messing with you and do something exactly like that. This is as real as it gets.
No, yeah, I stood over on the side and waited till those guys were done before I jumped in to lift my measly, 30-pound weights. So
what a weekend we just had. It was, I think everybody involved could feel how special it was. No matter how we consumed it, whether it was on The Score or on the Marquee Network or ESPN, Fox, something happened this weekend that was memorable.
Yeah, I don't know if you were able to see it on television, but in the ballpark, it was a moment. And, it's interesting when you think back, like a year ago, the ballpark was a food pantry, and the hotel across the street was a shelter for our physicians down the street. And then we converted it to a pop-up vaccine center. And I think, to have everybody come back into the ballpark, it was, you nailed it, Dan. It was a moment that was different. And, what it brought back to me was, the feeling I had when I was in the park in 2016 in game 6 against the Dodgers, where there was, joy and celebration and excitement, but mostly relief. Like people were relieved and they were letting it out, man. They had some fun this weekend.
They did. We've apparently stumbled into a very controversial in-game topic, that of cup snakes in the bleachers. They got a lot of love on ESPN night last night. We've laughed about it. Are you pro or anti, or does it matter at all?
Oh yeah. So the cup snakes have become a thing. And, I've talked about whether we need a snake pit out in the bleachers, just a place to let people go snake if they want to. what we decided to do this weekend was just let them snake. And here's the controversy about cup snakes. Listen, we love fun, right? And people in the bleachers know how to have it. There are people who do complain when the half drunk beer cup spills on them when the snake's being passed around, that they're getting, drenched with beer. Your comment could be, well, then don't sit in the bleachers. but it kind of goes both ways. So we've tried to kind of police it a little bit. What we decided for the homecoming weekend was we're just going to let them go ahead. And I think we saw one that was like as tall as a Sears Tower out there at one point.
It was very impressive.
That was some serious work out there.
Or you just sell the sponsorship to it, you know, in my cynical, old-fashioned way of thinking here. That could be inventory, and you could find a way that King Cobra malt liquor or something would want to piece.
Hefty.
There you go. Right? There's your corporate partner, and then you can give them ponchos like they're at a Gallagher concert for the people who want a branded Hefty poncho. They can wear one.
Are you trying to get Faulkner's job? It sounds like you're going to lead our marketing group soon.
Speaking of Faulkner, we had him on Friday, just before to let people know what was going on. And there was some concern over having enough staff and how this was going to be. So let me ask you now, after the fact, how did it go? What did you learn?
So, first of all, it went well. We were a little anxious about bringing 100% in. There was, it was interesting, though, that folks were, folks were so happy to be out. And I'll tell you, it was interesting watching, especially on Friday. It was almost like people were relearning old habits. Like, we've all had to condition ourselves. Remember, 18 months ago when all of a sudden it was illegal or forbidden to shake hands. And, you and I walk into a room together, we're going to shake hands. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, no, I can't do that. I can't do that anymore. And I got to wear my mask and I got to keep 6 feet of distance. And the same was true in the ballpark. We reopened with 25% and there was 6 feet among every person and masks on. And God knows you never touch hands and you can't do this and you can't go there. And we had the ballpark subdivided into 20 neighborhoods and certain restrooms were open for some people and not others. And then on Friday, it was interesting. I was walking around the ballpark and you'd see Peterson hits his home run and people look at each other. You're standing next to a stranger. You're not 6 feet apart. You're not wearing a mask. Like, can I high five you? And then kind of like little quick fist bump. And then, by the fifth inning, after a few malt beverages, fist bump turns into high five. And by the ninth inning, go Cubs go, everybody's hugging each other and shoulder to shoulder. And it's kind of like relearning the old ways of doing it and lots of smiles. So that went well. We do have some labor shortages like a lot of restaurants around, and really want to thank our fans for being patient at the concession stands. It went better than we hoped. It wasn't perfect. A couple of spots in left field in particular, some longer lines than we had hoped for, but all in, pretty successful weekend.
Well, and I think it's important for people to be reminded that this is a work in progress, just trying to figure that out. Some pre-pandemic habits and practices might not be there. Some post will be. I know Colin talked about the importance of still using mobile technology in order to order beforehand. So is this a good time to remind people that there are things that are still going to improve and there are going to be some things that take time as well?
Yeah, that's well said, Layla. And we appreciate you doing the public service announcement for us. Yeah. The things we've learned from the pandemic that we're going to keep are, our touchless entry, so you don't have to empty your purse or pockets. Digital ticketings, I think folks have kind of adopted it now. You can move your tickets from you to your friends. You don't have to physically hand them a paper ticket. The mobile ordering shortens the lines. And actually, it's not the technology that's stifling our success at the concession stands. It's literally labor. Like, we just can't get enough people in the building to work. We know during the pandemic, a lot of folks moved out of town and into other states that were more open. And we just have had less success recruiting and hiring in our seasonal staff than we have in the past. That'll get better as the season goes on. And I think as people realize we are open, we're going to have 40,000 in the ballpark. We'll get those things solved. But I can't say enough about our fans. It's one of the reasons I was really happy to come on today. They've been so patient. Folks who've been waiting for us to get beyond 25%, our season ticket holders who've been, really anxious to get back in their seats, and a lot of their seats were zip tied because, the 6 foot buffer requirement. And everybody coming together, it felt like a reunion of sorts on Friday. Everybody, and obviously a lot of VIPs in the building, and we saw Justin Fields come in and Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, Mike Breen, all the guys who were calling the games up north. And we saw our good friend Jim Phillips from Northwestern, now the ACC commissioner. And George McCaskey was in. Like everybody wanted to be in the ballpark, and it felt so much different than a regular season game, even a Friday Cardinals game, which usually generates some attraction. It was, as we were talking about earlier, it was a moment. And I think for our country and our city, a moment to say, you know, maybe we're turning the corner here, and we can return to some of the rituals of summer that we've enjoyed so much in our lives.
Before we let you go, and that's really well said, what about the hard numbers? Now that you've actually, the receipts are in, and how do the numbers inform the ever-shifting budget as we get toward the trade deadline?
Yeah, it's a great question, Dan. So the numbers were really good. Strong attendance. You know, people say, well, Wrigley Field sold out all the time. The truth is, you know, we have a six-month lead-in to selling our tickets. And as you know, we go on sale with our season ticket holders in the fall. We do the holiday packs and the flex packs, and, you know, group sales start in January. We have a big on sale in February. Because we didn't know if we were going to have any fans this year, we didn't do any of that. So we're kind of flat-footed, you know, as we kind of came into the season. We were happy to get to 25 and then happier to get to 60. And then when the mayor, who was in the ballpark, both Mayor Emanuel, former mayor, and then Mayor Lightfoot, both in the ballpark on Sunday, and I caught a few minutes with Mayor Lightfoot, you know, when she finally gave us permission to go to 100%, we have tickets to sell moving forward. So there are tickets to buy if folks want to come visit. But with just a short sales window, we got to, I think, 35 on Friday, a little more on Saturday and Sunday. And so those numbers beat our plan. Concessions were strong. So it does help us. And it'll help us when we go to the trade deadline with Jed. And I said this last week when I was talking to David Haw and Mully. Finances won't be the issue at the deadline. As we know, the currency that most people are looking for at the deadline is talent. And the question is, will we be prepared to move talent to add to this team? And, you know, can we find a dance partner? So, but yeah, numbers were really good. And thanks again to our fans who so incredibly patient and so supportive once we reopen.
Crane, thank you, Crane.
Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate
it. Okay, guys. Hope to see you soon.
Thanks, Crane.
That is Crane Kenny, the Cubs president of business operations. There's a lot of optimism in there on a lot of fronts.
Absolutely, especially that last question. I didn't have time to get him to confirm the Taco Bell question, but I think we all know the answer. It's coming. We just don't know when.
The Midday Midway is coming, and we do know when. And I have a real-life biblical story. You don't get those very often, but this was an Old Testament biblical story. Think preaching in Nineveh.
Well, I mean, there's been some plagues and stuff. Do those count? Westminster Dog Show. Dog Talk. Next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
Once, twice. Way. The most important of the year. Three times, four times.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
Nine, ten.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
We've reached the Midday Midway. We started out by having kind of a little fun Bears Monday kind of thing and grabbing phone calls and talking about the weekend, lamenting the fact that the Cubs' idiotic lack of vaccination threshold could put them in a really ugly situation come playoff time. Because if you're reading about what's going on with the Delta variant and what is happening in unvaccinated areas and largely unvaccinated areas, that people are getting really sick really fast, and look at what's happened in other countries, that there is reasonable concern that no matter what Jed Hoyer does at the deadline, no matter what we hear about what they can do to bolster their team, that they could be in a John Rahm situation of having everything go great until everything is absolutely off the rails for absolutely avoidable reasons. It sucks to have to think about. I wish I didn't because of all the cool stuff that happened over the weekend. Zach Zaidman joined us, and Crane Kenny said that finances now are not going to be an issue at the deadline. So that's good.
He said it. We heard him say it. It's important. Westminster Dog Show happened over the weekend. And a Pekingese won. The Pekingese's name is pretty great. Wasabi.
I didn't know what animal it was, let alone what breed, when I first saw the picture. I don't know what it is. I didn't know what it was that entity was.
It's a fluff ball.
Yep.
And my favorite tweet is, a blonde wig someone found in a Walmart parking lot won the Westminster Dog Show. Because that's kind of how it looks. But I like funny dog picks, so do yourself a favor today and look at the best of the dog picks. Apparently, his owner says for the win, he can have a filet mignon and the owner is going to have some champagne. I think the owner should also have some filet mignon. I feel like that would be a fair split of the steak.
I would give the dog a better cut of steak than a filet mignon. That is just, give him a ribeye, give him the rib cap.
Tomahawk.
Give him a New York strip.
Just go 100%.
Filet, no. If it, really, you're trying to be fancy? A filet's just sort of soft and meh.
This sounds like a spinoff for Best in Show. A couple of other winners. Bourbon the Whippet, one in the Hound Group. Bourbon's a great name. Matthew, the French Bulldog, won in the non-sporting group, which is the group that I attend every day. I'm a non-sporting person. Herding group, Connor, the Old English Sheepdog, which cracks me up that a sheepdog's named Connor. And I know those are not the real names if they're AKC, by the way, but still funny.
What do you mean?
They have to be like unique names if they're AKC registered, so they get pretty fancy.
Like horses.
I think so.
Really?
Same idea. Jade, the German short-haired pointer. The son of CJ, who was crowned Best in Show in 2016, won in the sporting group. In the working group, it is Strikers the Samoyed, is how you say it?
I think so.
Okay. I've never known how to say it. They just look like a fluffier husky and happy. And then in the terrier group, it was Boy, the West Highland White Terrier. So I like that the dog show's being front and center. I'm used to always seeing them over Thanksgiving weekend, but Westminster's here and a wig won. The end.
A Cape Cod lobster diver was safe Friday following a fluke encounter with a humpback whale that nearly made him the Leviathan's lunch. This from CNN. Michael Packard was diving off the coast of Provincetown, Massachusetts Friday when the capital cetacean caught him unawares. He said, I got down to about 45 feet of water and all of a sudden I felt this huge bump and everything went dark. And I could sense that I was moving. And I was like, oh my God, did I just get bit by a shark? Then I felt around. I realized there were no teeth, and I felt really no great pain. And then I realized, oh my God, I'm in a whale's mouth.
Ah!
I'm in a whale's mouth, and he's trying to swallow me. Packard, an experienced diver, told WBZ that he still had his breathing apparatus on while in the whale's mouth. And he said, one of the things that went through my mind was just, oh my God, what if he does swallow me? And here I am, I'm breathing air, and I'm going to breathe in this whale's mouth until my air runs out. And I thought, okay, this is it. I'm going to die. I thought about my kids and my wife. There was no getting out of there. After what Packard estimated to be about 30 seconds in the mammal's mandibles, the whale surfaced quickly and spit him out. He said, all of a sudden, he just went up to the surface and erupted and started shaking his head. I got thrown in the air and I landed in the water and I was free and I just floated there. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe I got out of that and I'm here to tell it. He was pulled out of the water by a crewmate, rushed ashore, taken to a nearby hospital. He said he was all bruised up, but whole. And according to the director of humpback whale studies at Provincetown Center for Coastal Studies, the unusual encounter was most likely an accident. Biologist Juke Robbins said, we don't see humpbacks doing anything like this normally. Occasionally, they engage in so-called lunge feeding, in which a fast-moving whale tries to gather a large volume of food in its mouth quickly. So when they do that, they don't necessarily see everything. She said he was unlikely to have been swallowed, as despite their massive mouths, their throats aren't large enough for a person to fit through.
What? That's the weirdest part of the story.
Well, it's really only krill, and the krill is siphoned away through the baleen.
I don't know what that is.
The baleen are the hair-like appendages that would be in the place of teeth. They're filter feeders. So they suck the water through their baleen, and then whatever's left there, they kind of they swallow down.
Blech.
And they compare it, saying it's a little like sitting down to a really nice meal and a fly flies in your mouth.
Oh, the human was the fly.
And the human was the fly.
This story terrified me because I realized that he's basically describing dying without dying, as he says, when everything just goes dark. And then you're like, well, that's the end. And the way he just talked about his mental process, how are you not permanently traumatized after that?
I think you probably want to talk to a counselor about some of that stuff, probably. But man, that is... Well, think about it this way. If you're already a lobster diver, and it sounds like he was like the equivalent of a free diver where he has an oxygen hose, but he wasn't scuba,
Right.
And they can go down to a certain depth and skin dive. That how many things has he already encountered? Like, this guy's seen some stuff. This guy's got so many stories. Because if you're a lobster diver, like, you're reaching under things and grabbing stuff and putting the lobster in a bag and coming up, and like, there's great white sharks around there.
Being swallowed by a whale is the biggest story.
Have you ever been near a humpback whale?
No.
When we were in Cabo San Lucas and we did a snorkeling trip, and on the way back, a whale breached about 30 feet from our boat. And we saw like a disturbance, and then everybody said, balena, balena, balena. Whoa. And I thought it was going to be in the distance. So my eyes were sort of set far off from the boat, and it comes right up. And this is like, it's like a Disney ride or something, but it's real. Like, oh my God, look at the size of that thing. And then later on in the trip, we did get to see them from a distance, multiple. But seeing one up that close, it is astonishing.
It is. Mm. You can't comprehend the size. And I also think of the story that went viral about the whale, I guess, washed up on the beach in the Philippines, and somehow it had like swollen to a huge size and they didn't know what
because
it was.
Because it was rotting.
Yeah, but they like also didn't know what it was necessarily. And I'm like, man, sea monsters are for real. We just have names for them, but they're still sea monsters.
The Kraken. Yeah, those putrefied whales explode. And then they rain rotted flesh on everybody.
Yeah, if you want to disturb yourself on this lovely Monday, go check out that picture and the picture of the Pekingese. Man, that makes me not want to go in the water again.
Oh, the chances of that happening to you are slim and none. You're much more likely to be eaten by a shark if that makes you feel any better.
No, it doesn't. I hate sharks. I question their existence, but people say they're necessary.
Or stung by a jellyfish. That happens all the time. There's
that's normal.
There's all sorts of awful things that happen to you in the ocean.
Jellyfish are piling up, by the way, in gross piles.
Yeah, that's another kind of global climate issue, they think, and they're trying to figure out why and what can be done about it, but that's for another time. That has been the Midday Midway. And next up, we got to talk White Sox, because, boy, grumbling White Sox.
On a stomach talking Cubs on national TV. What about the White Sox?
I love it. I love you, Sox fans. You never disappoint.
They're mad at me this morning. They're mad at us already.
What did we do?
Talked about the Cubs.
Oh, no. For shame.
Shouldn't be about that life, family. Everybody's in first place. Everybody's in first place.
Yeah, it's all good. White Sox get a sweep over a god-awful Detroit team. Boy, Detroit sports now. Yikes, what a dumpster fire it is to be a sports fan in that city. Good
At least
Lord.
We're not Detroit.
That's right. We'll do that next on The Score.
Sox fans,
we're not Detroit!
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.